Ben, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, it's just a pleasure to talk to you. We're very excited for the start of the season. We know that the roster cuts is it's a difficult day, an important day. How do you feel about where you're at right now with time a-ticking and the season in the offing?
I think we've had a tremendous training camp. We achieved a lot of the goals that we set out to do, which is, you know, techniques and fundamentals, mastering the scheme, situational football. So we're in a good place going into this first week, and I think we're going to continue to get better as the season goes on. In terms of the roster, I think Ryan and I have had some really good dialogue on where we're at, where we could potentially get better here over the next few days. And I think us as a coaching staff have a lot of confidence in the guys that certainly are going to make the 53, but we're hopeful that the guys on practice squad are going to be able to contribute at some point this year as well.
What do you think the strength of this roster is? And when you look at it objectively, do you believe it's talented enough to win the NFC North?
Yeah, there's no question. We can talent's not going to be an issue in this league. You know, it's all about these guys going out there, believing in what we're doing, how we want to play ball, executing at a high level, and we'll see how it plays out from there. I know this is a talented division. It's really well coached across the board, but we like our chances just as much as the next team. So we feel good about that. You know, I do think the strength of our team that I've felt over the course of training camp is probably going to be up front. And I say that maybe not from the flash players, but I think the depth that we have, both offensive line and defensive line, those are both areas that you don't just play your starting four or five. You end up playing good 8, 9, 10 guys over the course of the season. So the depth that we have at those two spots, it's really going to pay dividends for us here this year.
Coach, we have seen you come in the standard is the standard. You've talked about that. You've come in and you've worked with Caleb Williams. We all feel that relationship is the most important one, you with the quarterback. We know your background. We know where he was taken and what he can do. I'm just curious, when you start talking about the standard, when you start talking about where you're at with Caleb, you've set a lot of lofty goals for him and a lot of ideas of how he needs to play. Have they been adjusted at all as you get to the start of the season? Have you changed any of those goals? What does success look like for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, no, the standard has been set. The bar has been set high. He has said that he wants to be not just one of the best top five quarterbacks in this league, but he wants to have a legacy that lasts for a long time. And so we're coaching him that way. We're approaching it that way. That's not going to change. Is he going to be a finished product here year two? No, he's going to continue to get better year in and year out, and it's a process. And so we're very clear on that. You know, there is a little bit of grace here as we go through it. We know he's learning. He's going to take his bumps. But at the same time, as long as we're not making the same mistake twice, we're going to be right on track and we'll be just fine. So it's one of those things, coming to work every single day with a great attitude. His attitude's contagious to the people around him. So being positive, willing to learn, being coachable, those things go a long way for not just this season, but his long-term process.
Ben, you had one training camp practice that I think we were going to make a documentary about. People were talking about how physical it was and how much of a throwback it seemed. And then you had the Dolphins come to town in a joint practice, and one of the Dolphins players was whining later about how physical those practices were. Why was it important to you, and what was the goal in structuring your training camp and setting that tone so the physicality was the biggest takeaway?
Yeah, I think that's the name of the game in this division. It's the black and blue division for a reason. We've talked to our players about that, and they've really embraced that mindset. I think there's a certain way you need to play this game if you want to win this division. And so we're going to practice that way, particularly when we're in pads. That's what we're looking to do. That's really, you have a limited number of opportunities in training camp and then during the season to wear those pads in practice. And we look to maximize those opportunities because what you do in practice does show up in the game. And so when it's just in your head that you're going to stop the football on defense and you're not going to let it go any further. And on offense, our perimeter guys are going to block in the running game. They're going to block for their buddies after we catch the ball down the field. It just shows up on game day, and those little things go such a long way in gaining an edge over your opponent.
Coach, we know that the step up from being an offensive coordinator to a head coach is a fairly profound one. You have been ready to make that move. You've been you've had opportunities to make that move. You finally do so now. How well organized were you? I mean, how when did you put together the schedule? When did you know? You could have been a head coach a year ago and you waited and you wanted to finish the job in Detroit. I'm just curious as to how prepared you felt for this particular role, and was there anything that surprised you when you finally got here and finally took over?
No, I think that's the best part of this particular situation that I walked into. I was actually talking to Ryan about that the other day, is the fact that a lot of the structure was already in place. I'm talking about from great ownership to Kevin Warren at president to Ryan on as a general manager and on the personnel side. There are a lot of things that I would have maybe struggled with if it was a first-time GM and we're both finding our way, that Ryan, naturally, he can help. He helps so much already. He's helped in the springtime and in training camp. It's really a good thing that he's been around and he's been able to be helpful that way. And so you look at it that aspect, and then also on the coaching staff, being able to get this collection of guys that have experience, they've done it at a high level. We have a group that have been to Super Bowls, they've won Super Bowls, they know what winning football looks like, head coaching experience on the staff, coordinating experience on the staff. I mean, we've got a wealth of knowledge that it just makes my life a lot easier, and to where I'm not having to do this blind. I didn't hire a bunch of buddies. I got a bunch of guys that don't feel like they need to just tell me what I need to hear. They tell me what they feel like is the truth, and that goes a long way. So, yeah, to your point, it was by design that it was all structured this way, and I think it gives us a better chance to get off the ground faster than maybe some other first-time head coaches.
And they will all follow you. I mean, you will set the tempo. You are the leader of this pack, and so when you get in front of the room and when you've gotten in front of the media, I think it's been pretty consistent. The passion, intensity, those are the words that have been used to describe your approach. When you address your team, do you sense that you have a locker room full of guys, a building full of people who love football, who love their jobs as much as you seem to love yours?
There's no question about it. And that's a credit to Ryan for filling that locker room with a bunch of guys that are prideful. They're pros. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie in here or you're a 10-plus-year vet. These guys, they want to win. They want to be really good players individually, but more than anything, they want to see their buddies do well, and they want to win. So that's what makes it fun when you're in front of them as a coach, whether it's as a head coach or as a play caller talking to your unit. I think it goes a long way because the buy-in is there. The buy-in really is there.
It's kind of fun to watch the way that you operate and to see all the things that you've got to deal with. I'm wondering if, you know, if there was any issue, maybe even just the NFLPA policies that impact your practices, was there anything that kind of frustrated you a little bit as you tried to get everything organized and get this team up and running?
No. Honestly, you couldn't have asked for a smoother start from the springtime. I thought we had a great setup in terms of our plan for phase one, phase two, and phase three throughout the springtime. And then camp has gone great. I mean, being here at Hallis Hall, I think we've had a great setup. We've got access to everything that we could possibly need here. Our travel has been outstanding, from going down to the stadium the night before the game at home to last week going to Kansas City, getting on the plane. I just think everything's been first class. And so our players feel that. They feel everything. And when they see that everything around them is structured, it's organized, but also everything's being done first class, it allows them to dive into their craft and give their all as well.
We're talking with Bears head coach Ben Johnson here on the Mully Haas Show on 670 The Score. So you have been known for your candor and how direct you can be, whether it's good or bad, positive or negative. So what's going on at left tackle, and why are you stopping short about with Braxton Jones, who seems to be the starter, but you're reluctant to maybe name him that yesterday? Where do you stand with left tackle, and have you treated that position a little bit differently than some of the others?
No, I'm treating the entire roster all the same. We're not naming starters right now. We're not even talking about week one yet, okay? I know Minnesota is coming up around the corner, but this week is still about us. We had a great special teams practice on Monday. Yesterday was really good situational work. Today we're going to be in pads for our last time before we get into game week, and so we need a great practice here today. And we're just focused about us. And so that's why I'm not in the business of talking about starters yet. Next week we'll handle all that, who's going to be out there, the first team, second team, what our roles are. But just that's not the time or the place right now for us. And so I want to keep the main thing the main thing. That's not to distract from the fact that we've had a battle there at left tackle. We've had some really good candidates. But I'm just not at the point yet to anoint anybody anything at any position.
Do you feel that it's an advantage that you've put together game plans for a team like the Vikings before? I heard some of the Detroit guys say they recognize some of the plays. I think Kay Adams asked you about it, and you were like, well, that's some game plan from 3 years ago. Like, you're not doing a game plan for a preseason game, as we all know. But are your ideas about what they do impacted by the different personnel you have here in Chicago?
Yeah, and so I alluded to it already, and I know it's not a flashy thing to say, but camp for us has been about mastering the techniques and the fundamentals of a number of things. It depends on what position you're playing, so everyone's a little bit different. But I think up front, if you're on the offensive line, I want to see a great deuce block in the gap scheme. I want to see our tight ends and our tackles triple up to the second level. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can keep going on and on and on. And yet, that's why the plays don't matter as much. It's about the execution of these techniques and these fundamentals. Hmm. And then once we get into the season, that's when we can dress everything up with the shifts and the motions and the personnel groups and getting guys into certain spots. But right now, it's about let's get lined up and let's get really good at doing this, because once we get the building blocks down, that's where we can stack them all up together and make it into something really cool.
Yesterday, of all the things we heard, the lack of clarity surrounding the Jalen Johnson situation was probably of most concern because of his value to this defense and because of what the challenge is on Monday night against Justin Jefferson. What kind of clarity can you provide, if any, Coach, about whether or not you're confident Jalen Johnson will be available or when he will start practice?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. You know, we'll have some good time off. This will be our last practice until next week today. We'll have some good time off. We'll be able to really reset and see who's practicing next week to what extent. The hope has been from the get-go that the soft tissue injury would be resolved by the time week one turned around, and we're going to be right up on that timeline, I think, for Jalen.
Coach, we'll let you go. I'm just curious, what do you consider success this year? Is it about development? Is it about winning games? I mean, what is it that you're looking for this season?
I think at the end of the day, we as a team, I'm talking about coaches and players alike, we need to establish our brand of football going forward, all right? And it's our physical nature. We need to be poised under pressure. We need to be detailed schematically and fundamentally, and I think the results will take care of itself, but it's really that buy-in with what we've been talking about from the spring to training camp that needs to show up for us over the course of the season, and we're going to just get better and better and better. We'll be playing our best football in December and January if we get that done.
Great stuff, Coach. Really looking forward to the season, and we're really excited for
you. Thanks, Ben. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
That is Ben Johnson, the Bears head coach.
Interesting guy. Craig, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? We're doing well. We're doing well. Your baseball team's 7-3 in the last 10. You've made a little bit of ground in the division and obviously leading the wild card chase. What was the emotion of last week like? And I don't mean like the Craig Council, Wisconsin stuff. I mean the Cubs and the Brewers and what last week was like.
Well, I think the reality of it is that they're a really good baseball team. They're the best team in the big leagues right now, record-wise. And I think, you know, going up against that team, that means that you're going to have a major challenge. And so I think it was fun to watch our guys, you know, rise up to that challenge and take on that challenge and succeed in that challenge. So that was probably the biggest thing. It was good baseball. You know, it was the first day they beat us pretty good and it wasn't a great game. The last 4 days were really good baseball.
Craig, something that I always know you talk about is you should want to play in high-stakes games, great atmospheres down the stretch. For you as a manager, has it changed for you maybe those first couple of years to now in what managing those games going into October, knowing that the playoffs are on the line, than maybe you felt years later and right now?
No, you know, not a lot. I mean, I think – you know, this is, you know, a fun time of year. It's when, you know, emotions get turned up. There's no question about it. And that makes it more fun. Sometimes it makes it, you know, a little tougher on the loss for, you know, the hour or so after the game. But it's when you're in it, it's why you want to be in it, to feel it and to be a part of the fun stuff and the hard stuff. And I've told our guys that a number of times. It's like, you're going to feel the good stuff and you're going to feel the bad stuff just more this time of year. And don't like run away from it. Just feel it and then, you know, move on. Because that's what we love to do. And we're lucky to be here.
On this road trip, Kyle Tucker has been a menace at the plate. He has been back to doing what he has done for most of the year. Inside of that struggle with Kyle Tucker, what were the things that you felt it was important for him to know? And what things as a manager did you feel like you needed to know to either keep putting him in the lineup or sitting him down?
Oh man, I don't know if I have a great answer to that one. I mean, you know, that this is when you use your experience and you use your, you know, your, this is a gut feel thing. You're kind of taking your experience from watching players and for 30 years in the game, and you're making calls based on that and what you see. There's no, you know, obviously the numbers were not great, and he was struggling, and you try to worry. I think most importantly, you think about the person. You stop kind of thinking about the baseball player and you just think about the person, and I think those are when you get those decisions right.
Results are not always the truth of what's happening. So I always tend to ask people involved, like the numbers for Kyle in these games against the Angels and have been good. Has the process been good? How would you describe the at-bats?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to complain about process when the ball goes 380 feet into the stands.
Facts.
I'd be making something up to complain about stuff if that was the case. But as a hitter, you want to square up the baseball. And you know, Kyle sometimes keeps it really simple for you guys, and we don't like that, how simple he keeps it. But that's what his job is to do, is to square up the baseball. What was he not doing during his slump? Squaring up the baseball. When he hits a home run, he squares up the baseball. So that's, you know, he's doing what he wants to do.
Craig,
too simple?
No. I think baseball, something you boil it down, throw the ball, hit the ball, catch the ball.
No, I get it. It's supposed to be simple, but there are so many times, like in sports in general, where you go, oh, well, that result was great, but was the process sustainable? That's why I like to ask. Like, I just like to know.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I think in the hitting place, you know, I think when you're going through slumps, you're kind of, it's a little bit of trial by error, you know, and I think you kind of end up going pitch to pitch and at bat by at bat, maybe trying some things. in the end, what you need to confirm an adjustment you've made is the ball squared up. That's what you need, right? And Kyle got some of those this weekend, and it just helps you, man. It helps you mentally as much as physically.
Craig, your starting staff was kind of under the microscope, especially going into the trade deadline, and they've been able to, be one of the best groups, if not the best group in baseball. And a big part of that has been Cade Horton, who has a sub-1 ERA in the second half. I know the fastball was something that he kind of struggled with early on when he first got called up, and it's been really good as of late. Is there anything that you've seen in his starts specifically with the fastball that has made that pitch come to life recently?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think his fastball is it's really unique, I think. And I think he's got some more, some more room for growth with it. But, what's so unique about it is that we call it a cut fastball, which means it goes away to a right-hander and into a left-hander. And he doesn't always have complete control over how much or how little it's going to cut. It's just kind of how the ball comes off his fingers, pitch to pitch. And Justin Steele has a little bit of this going on too. But the ball's just moving, at 96 miles an hour, and the hitter just can't, especially the left-handed hitter, really has a hard time of getting the barrel to that pitch. And so he's able to just attack so aggressively in the zone. And as long, middle pitches still get hit, but as long as you kind of just stay out of the middle, the fastball just plays so well anywhere in the strike zone.
I know, because he's been so locked in, you almost don't want to mess with him. But when obviously he only pitched 34 innings last year, and I know that's something you guys have been mindful of with limited off days. In the last month of the season, I think you guys have 3 off days. Is there any maneuvering to try to get him any more rest, knowing that you have, big goals in mind for the postseason? Or do you just let his body kind of tell you guys what you need to do as far as rest is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, we've been on about 6 starts into definitely limiting his pitches every start, making a big effort to limit his pitches. So he's only got the 80 pitches, I think, once, and that was really because of a 10-pitch at bat. That's probably number one. When we have days to back him up, we will take advantage of it. But I think, lowering the pitch count, I think, is right now proving to be successful in terms of how he feels and how he's recovering. And we're using that as our guide right now. May we change something kind of the next month? Yeah, we're kind of, it's start to start, and we're considering everything, but he's, all signs point to his recovery going as well as possibly could. So, just not concerned. And that's a credit to Cade's kind of athleticism and his preparation. But it's something, obviously, we monitor for sure and monitor on a daily basis.
Well, the fun thing about having Craig on, and we're talking with Cubs manager Craig Counsell, and Russ Dorsey is in for Speaks. Craig knows how sports radio works, so sometimes he'd be like, hey, I'm going to do the sports radio thing, and this is, I'm not going to do the sports radio thing. I'm going to do a sports radio thing right now. I'm going to reverse a sports radio thing real quick. Because the sports radio thing is, when things go bad, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach, right? I'm going to do the reverse sports radio thing. Things have gone so well for the Cubs pitching infrastructure, and with individuals that the Cubs have brought in, I was wondering, legitimately this morning, I was wondering, does Tommy Hotovy want to be a manager?
I that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. I have not asked him that specific question. I'll ask him for you and report back.
Okay. I look forward to that. I also would love to follow up on that question on something that maybe you can answer. I know I kind of put you on the spot with that. If there is someone on your staff that's like, I want to grow and be you or be better than you, what are the things that you try to help them do to get to that point? If someone says that they want
the
to
opposite.
do the opposite of what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're the highest paid manager in the game. You want to follow that path right there.
Ah, looks can be deceiving. You know what I mean? You got to always stay ahead of it. You got to stay ahead of it.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer by Craig.
All right. I tried. Okay. I tried. I just wanted to do the reverse sports radio thing.
Craig, one thing
I'll ask Tommy. I absolutely think Tommy's capable of it. I think he's, you know, the great thing about Tommy is that one, he's the best thing is that he's just an insanely hard worker. Two things: he's an insanely hard worker, and he really cares deeply about his players and the Chicago Cubs. You put those things together, and you're going to have a person that's very successful at their job. And Tommy's been very successful, and he's really kind of built his, you know, resume, so to speak, kind of the right way, in terms of like working his way from a lot of jobs that taught him a lot about people, a lot about the organization. And he's certainly put in a long stretch of, just time with the Cubs. And I think he's got a really good sense of the organization, how it works and the history of it. And that's been very helpful to me for sure.
Lawrence, you're going to get a nice edible arrangement from Tommy Harvey here. I think that's a good thing to put into the ethos.
Well, look, as Craig was talking, I just thought about it and I figured out how to sports radio this even more. Okay, so now what we'll do is Tanny will clip that conversation, and then the morning show, when they have Tommy Harvey on, they'll ask him if he's ever thought about being a manager. And then I'll get the response and play it before Craig's back on the show. So it's a win-win-win-win-win for us here on this show.
There we go.
See? Now I instead of having a conversation with Tommy, I'm now going to warn him.
Like, hey, man. So I went home with Lawrence Holmes and Russ Dorsey, and they wanted to hire you as a manager.
Holmes is out there starting mess, Tommy. Don't fall for it. That's what he's going to say. It's all good.
All good. All good.
Craig, there's something that's interesting I saw watching the game last night. You're the only active manager that had a homer off of Justin Verlander. Now, one, does that surprise you? And two, when you see a Justin Verlander or a Max Scherzer and those guys are still getting it done at a high level, does that surprise you in this day and age of baseball?
Well, look, I mean, Verlander's, I think, 41. And if you're playing in the big leagues at 41, you're a great player. I mean, it means you've done great things. It means you've been able to sustain, you know, a level of performance at an age when very, very few are. So there's just respect for that, I think, more than anything. It's a Hall of Fame career, right? And so there's just respect for that no matter what. No matter what happens in the game, there's absolute respect for that.
It's cool to have some of those tentacles of the game. It's funny because I feel like that's one of those great things about baseball, is that there's so much history to it, Craig, that if you start looking, it's in every game note package. And MLB teams do a great job of being like, hey, this guy played for this guy, and this guy was teammates with this guy. Have you ever, inside of the game, like, really had, and you had Pat Murphy with you for forever, and you guys are connected going way back. But have you ever, like, looked across the diamond, like the what is it, for the love of the game, where you're like, man, I'm so happy that guy, I remember when that guy was struggling, or I remember when that guy came up, and I'm so happy that they've turned into the player that they've turned into, or the coach or the manager that they've turned into.
Yeah, I mean, look, Drew Pomerantz. I mean, our simple story this year, which has been fun for me, is Drew Pomerantz. Drew Pomerantz pitched for me in Milwaukee in 2019, had a great season, signed a really nice contract with the Padres, pitched maybe 20 innings, and has been hurt for the last better part of the last 5 years, and has been in the minor leagues for the better part of the last two or three, and now is having major league success again at, you know, age 35. That makes you feel good, man. He's been, the lot hasn't gone right for the last 5 years, and he's gotten back and having a great season, and that's really fun to watch. No doubt about it.
Craig, I know,
but I mean, back to Verlander. It's funny what I think about the cool thing is that, you know, Matt Shaw's 23 years old. I'm 55 years old. We've both faced Justin Verlander in a major league game.
Wow.
You know, we're 30 years apart. 30 years apart in age. 32 years apart in age, and we both faced Justin Verlander in a major league game. Like, that's kind of crazy to think about like that.
That's some cool historic stuff. It is. For sure.
Speaking of baseball history, Craig, one of your longtime friends, Bob Uecker, was honored in Milwaukee over the weekend, and I know you probably got to see a lot of that. And I know Adam McKelvey put on Twitter that they've dedicated the press box to him up in Milwaukee. For people that didn't get to know Bob Uecker as well as you have, I've met him a couple of times before he passed and was always really kind. What should people know about who Bob Uecker was?
Well, I think, you know, Bob was just had a fascinating life. And he became like a celebrity. He was a TV star. But then he came back to baseball. And because he loved the daily, I think he taught you how to love the daily routine of baseball. It's one of the things that I always admired about him so much. You know, this is a, you know, into his, throughout his whole 80s, he came to the park every day to go to work and did the routine that a Major League Baseball season kind of requires you to do. And the great part and the difficult part about being a baseball fan or working in baseball is just the daily routine. It's a lot, right? It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of games. But it's also the great part about it. And I think Bob kind of always taught me like to just love and enjoy that part of it, the routine of it, the daily routine of it, and getting to interact with your friends and your coworkers and, you know, your opponents even. And Bob was great at that. And he thoroughly enjoyed it. He loved it. And he found out a way to make it fun for every interaction you had with him.
Craig, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Good luck tonight and the rest of the road trip.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to hang out with Coach Wonstead. Should we get right to some college games, or should we?
Can we table that for a second?
Okay,
because we were talking during the break, and we need to talk about this Netflix documentary on the Cowboys, because you have a story about Charles Haley that you promised and teased us, and I don't want that to go unspoken.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I got a lot of stories for that. Was God? I forgot how it was. Catholics versus convicts at Dallas too. Can't get I couldn't get away from it, Dustin. I'm sorry.
This scenario, you were the Catholic.
Yeah, You're the defensive coordinator. Charles Haley is the newly acquired defensive end.
Well, we had a meeting at the end of camp, me, Norv Turner, and Jimmy Johnson, and we were sitting around and we were having some drinks, and Jimmy was talking about, okay, what do we need to take the next step? And the conversation came up that we don't have a pass rusher. We don't have a dominant guy. That's when Charles Haley, they're going to cut him. So Jimmy gets the trade done for Charles, and we're all excited. Charles is in the first meeting. This is Tuesday, he would trade. Wednesday is the first meeting, and we're going to play Washington Sunday night ESPN football to start the NFL season. They had just won the Super Bowl. Okay, so just to tell you where this was as far as importance, and we're going to play in Texas Stadium. So Charles comes walking in the meeting, and he sits in the back, and we give him a notebook. And back then, I'm meeting with the whole defense, and I would write everything by hand on the board.
Yes.
Okay, none of this. You know, that's how it was.
No iPad stuff.
Yeah. So I'm writing in the game plan for Washington, and I hear this noise behind me, and I turn around, and he's sitting next to a guy named Chad Henning. Henning was an Air Force fighter pilot who was a starting defensive tackle for us. He did his time at the Air Force, played at the Air Force. One of the most organized, greatest, disciplined individuals on the team, probably the most. And I turn around and I says, Charles, what are you doing? Let's go get your notebook open. This we got this is important. He don't say a word. I turn around and shit, 2 minutes later, I hear this yakking and turn around and he's goosing guys. And I says, and I go off. And I, Charles, that's not how we do stuff here on. And I'm in his face, okay? The meeting's over. Everybody's leaving. I'm erasing the board, the whiteboard. All of a sudden, the door closes. I turn around. There's one guy standing there, Charles Haley. He gets up. Now, Charles Haley, I'm 6'4". He's bigger than I am. He's looking at me eye to eye, nose to nose, and he says, I want you to know something, Coach. I said, what's that, Charles? He says, if I didn't mature, I'd beat the living blankety blank out of you right now. And I said, Charles, I am glad that you've matured. And I look at my watch. I said, we got to be on the field in 10 minutes. Come on, let's go. I open the door. Now, Jimmy, his first meeting, he made this trade for this guy that sucker punched the head coach of the 49ers.
That's right.
Jimmy's standing out there outside the door like a kid at Christmas. And Charles goes storming by him, doesn't say a word. And I come walking out and he says, how'd it go? I says, fantastic, Coach. And I kept walking. And it wasn't until after the season that I told Jimmy the story. I said, you know, he threatened to kick my ass the very first meeting.
Did you think he was going to?
Did I think he was going to? No, because I knew Charles matured. You saw it on the tape.
Yeah.
Holy cow. The story I heard is that Jimmy was told, hey, he's nuts. Like he had they lost a game and he tore apart the locker room. And he wound up like in the fetal position weeping. And Jimmy said, that's how I take losing. Let's get him. Is that fairly accurate? Did he know that this was coming?
He's the same guy that threw his helmet at Jerry Jones and it stuck in the wall of the locker room because he wanted him. But let me tell you this. We played Washington that Sunday.
Yeah.
And Charles Haley lined up and played. I used him in nickel. And we don't win a Super Bowl if it's not for Charles Haley.
That's a great story.
I mean,
he brought
something to that team that we didn't have.
That's a good one. You're right, Dave. It was memorable.
That's excellent. Let's get to the college games.
Oh, yeah.
So you're taking Miami against Notre Dame.
I am. I mean, God.
Because it's at Miami?
No. They got a quarterback that they're paying a couple million bucks a year that's, 27-3, the kid from Georgia.
Isn't he about 27 years old?
I don't care how old he is. He's playing for Miami.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, I mean, they have to win this game. You know, they got a new defensive coordinator. They hired the guy who was Schiano's guy who left Schiano and went to Minnesota in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And they hired him away. So I like Miami. I think they're going to win.
You're going with Carson Beck.
I'm going
over CJ Carr.
Yes, I am.
Do you think Notre Dame made the right decision in CJ Carr?
I don't know enough about him
them. I'm not sure either.
I'm not sure.
But you know they're going to play defense. You know they can run the football. You know they're going to have an offensive line. And the running back tandem is as good as it gets in college football.
He is. No, I just think that the quarterback in a game like this has got to make some plays. And Miami's definitely got the edge.
What about Arch Manning? Is he overrated? Wow. Are we getting too much Arch Manning? They open at Ohio State. Ohio State has got some things to get together. They lost a lot from a championship team. How do you see that game?
Still have Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, I'm going to go with do you realize that Texas on their starting offense, every player is a five-star recruit except the tight end? Everyone. I mean, so they and they have the more experience. You know, the quarterback that's going to be playing for Ohio State for our listeners, he was the number one rated quarterback 2 years ago. He went to Alabama. Okay, out of high school. And then Saban left and he transferred.
Julian Saban?
Yes, he transferred to Ohio State. So he's a redshirt freshman. But I don't know. I think that Texas has the most experience and
interesting.
You know, I don't know about
What's
Manning.
What's the right way to watch Arch Manning this year? Because the expectations are enormous and there's no way that that's fair to somebody who really has never been a full-time starter at the college level.
Well, I think if everybody watched Cam Ward last year when he was playing at the University of Miami,
yes,
his accuracy, he had enough mobility to get out of problems, and he did a good job of protecting the football. you know, watching him last year as compared to all the other quarterbacks that were coming out, I thought personally, boy, that guy's a little bit different than the other ones.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like, you know, that's what's happening in the NFL too. So I don't know. We got to see. I don't know anything about Manning. I mean, I really don't. The guy's never, what did he start, four games?
Yeah.
That's the thing about college football, especially now with the transfer portal and everybody changing teams from year to year. Preseason polls aren't to be trusted.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
Clemson, by all accounts, has the best defensive line in college football.
Returning quarterback.
They got a quarterback coming back who's a pretty good player.
Yep.
The feeling is they're ready to be on the national stage again.
Yep.
Now LSU, you feel like Brian Kelly has to win.
Returning quarterback.
Another one.
I mean, Molly, you're bringing up a good point. That's why Illinois... What's Illinois got? 75% of their starters back. But Illinois is getting a lot of national play, deservingly so, because of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Oregon. Talk about the top 10s in the big team. Michigan, new quarterback. Ohio State, new quarterback. Oregon, new quarterback. USC, new quarterback. Washington, new quarterback. I mean, these are supposedly the powerhouse teams in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
All new quarterbacks, Illinois. There's his coming
Luke
back.
Luke Altmaier. That's the reason they
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Luke That's Altmaier. A great point. Yeah. That's why Penn State's up there at number two.
So do you
or
think,
one or whatever
do you think
they
the
are.
Hype surrounding Illinois is valid then?
I do. Yeah. I do.
Plus, you like Bielema.
I think
they got to find a receiver. They got to find a couple of receivers, but I mean, they are.
Good point. What was his name? Bryant?
Pat Bryant.
He was huge.
Broncos.
Yes.
One game's for him.
I think he's with the Broncos.
He's with the Broncos. And then Franklin was their backup guy. No, they. You're right. They're going to have to make some plays and score enough points against these.
So, do you like Clemson or do you like LSU in that one?
You know what? I'm an ACC guy because of Pitt being in, so I'm hoping Clemson wins. I'm not betting that one, but I like Clemson.
What do you think of Belichick's debut? And it's a Monday night game.
Yeah, well, they're not going to. You know, it's just a matter of how much talent they got. I mean, the hype is going to be there. You know, that'll be a new experience for these players.
Mm-hmm.
That type of hype, they're going to have to deal with that. Who do they open with? I don't even know who they open with.
Someone fairly decent.
Is it? Yeah. So I'll say this. You know, he's going to find out that dealing with 18-year-old kids is different than 35.
Probably already figured that one out.
Yeah.
You know, TCU travels TCU. Chapel Hill.
Sonny Dykes, the head coach at TCU, the guy's a heck of a football coach.
I think they're
coach.
Favored.
They're
TCU.
Probably going to lose. North Carolina's probably going to lose that game. And then we're going to see just how much fun this return to college is for Bill Belichick.
I agree. I went through that at Pitt. You know, I mean, you're going to have to keep the expectations.
Yes.
And I don't know. Can Bill do that? Can he be patient enough to do it and the alumni and everybody involved, you know?
Back to the Bears. Will there be any cuts today of note? We talked to Big Z. He mentioned the possibility of Billings being
Dan
cut.
Weeder also mentioned Andrew Billings. If Andrew Billings got cut, that would be a shocker.
It would be a shocker.
When I was up there, they were raving about Billings.
Okay.
He was one of the guys that they were really excited about. Now, I mean, he's not going to have a problem getting a job. I mean, if they cut Billings, he'll be signed tonight and be starting for somebody in the league. That's not going to be a problem for him. I think the biggest position, and we talked running back, okay? The secondary, for what Dennis Allen wants to do, guys, and I've said this before, you know, anytime – you know, Dennis Allen is more of a man team than what they were in the past with Eberflus.
Right.
And if you want to pressure, you're going to have to play, you know, man free, or you're going to have to play zero. You know, you're going to have to play some type of man coverage.
Yeah.
And to play effective man coverage, you got to have guys that can cover.
And Jalen Johnson
isn't hasn't played. Terrell Smith is gone.
Kyler Gordon is coming
what
back
happened
now?
To Nashawn Wright against the
Wright
Chiefs?
Nashawn Wright got killed.
He was definitely exposed. He was not ready for that moment. And I think that once he had that penalty, it seemed like he lost his confidence. And he was not in good coverage, and he wasn't in phase with these receivers, and it just wasn't a good night.
David, you're right. I mean, he got run by. You know what I mean?
He got run by, and he also grabbed a guy. And
that's stuff that a veteran guy – that's trying to make the club and make an impression should not have happened. So to me, secondary right now, you know, running back, you can run the ball and you're and make 2 or 3 yards if you're committed to it. The line will be better. But there's no hiding those defensive back guys.
No.
They're one-on-one. You're going to have to cover them.
We talked about the left tackle position, and we talked about the idea that they had three guys competing for it, and they didn't feel like the competition was good enough, so they found a fourth guy to compete for it. When you got four left tackles competing, that means you are in a serious hole at left tackle.
Yeah, I think they got to go with experience.
Yeah, Braxton Jones will be the starter.
Right, I mean, I think they got to go with experience, particularly the team that they're playing. I mean, this is
Minnesota.
With a lot.
Attack from every direction,
Mully, you're right. And there's communication against a team like Minnesota is going to be critical, as almost as critical as physically blocking a guy is going to be the mental communication between the offensive line.
So say you're a defensive coordinator in the NFC North and you're looking at the Vikings, and not necessarily that it'll affect you in the opener, but you see what they just did at the quarterback position. They trade away a backup that they hoped would emerge as the clear-cut number two, but they signed Carson Wentz, who was on the street, to back up a guy who is a de facto rookie and needs to stay healthy. How do you interpret what the Vikings are doing in signing Carson Wentz?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, except, you know, experience. And he must have a great rapport with the head coach or the quarterback coach or somebody or the system.
But it's late in the game to be signing a guy like that.
I know. That one really...
It's late in the game to give up on a backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that,
yeah. So
here's the thing, though, Dave. They got a guy who was kind of a broken player and they won whatever 15 games with him. They signed Daniel Jones. They're in line to get a potential fourth round draft pick because he's now starting, depending on playing time, because he's starting in Indy.
Right.
They drafted JJ, so they got him. I just wonder if they feel like, you know, they picked up 2 draft picks for Howell. They picked up another one, maybe for Daniel Jones. Do they feel like they can do the same thing next year?
They're recycling quarterbacks for draft picks.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know.
Is that possibly what they're thinking?
Yeah, it could be. Sure. But let's not, and we'll talk more about Minnesota next week before the game, but don't lose sight. The heart and soul, the lifeline of that Viking offense, in my opinion, is Aaron Jones, the running back.
Yeah.
He is the guy. You know, he makes that offense going, and they know it. And we experienced him too many times at Green Bay.
Definitely, you know? It's a good point.
Were you surprised at how bad the Bears were against the run versus Kansas City?
I think that's their biggest weakness.
They got beaten on the line.
Stopping
the
run is
going to
be the biggest problem for that defense.
I was a little bit disappointed, but I don't know. Dennis Allen, I just got confidence that he'll figure it out. But they're going to be facing a good offensive line in Minnesota with an outstanding running back, in my opinion, Aaron Jones. So they're going to have to get it solved in a hurry, that's for sure. And it's tough to stop. It's tough to improve on the run stuff when you're in this point in the season. You don't have the pads and you're not doing it full speed. I mean, you'll have people in the right places, but as far as getting off blocks and being physical, I don't know.
It's valid what you say about Aaron Jones. You think you'll ever be in a position to say the same thing about the Bears and DeAndre Swift?
No.
That was quick.
No, I mean,
he did not impress you Friday night
as a
hurdle the guy.
As a person, and he does some outstanding things. As good as anybody in the league, maybe, you know, the guy, but he's not David Montgomery type of runner. You know, between the tackles, it's going to bust the tackle and make an extra 2 or 3 yards.
And they don't have that guy, Dave.
They don't have
a component that pairs nicely with DeAndre Swift.
I agree.
How do you wind up in that position? Didn't they go into the draft knowing that they had to get a running back out of it?
Yeah.
How do you not then when you don't get one? And, you know, you can say all you want about the draft didn't fall to us, but then don't you sign someone off the street?
Yeah, I don't know who, you know, yes. I mean, that's the...
Whether it's Dobbins, where did he go? Denver?
Yeah. J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they had conversations with the top four or five backs, and were they gone? You know, there was a big push in the second round, and a lot of them came off the board. And now by the time you got to the third round, it was you were pretty much late. That's the way I look at it. So I don't know. They know what they got to do. And like I say, it may not be how many yards, but how many times we run the ball that's going to be the key.
Who's the Bears' best receiver?
Wow.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, it may be the rookie.
Which one?
Burden?
Well, that's...
Who's the other one? Who am I missing? I'm
Loveland.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's a wide receiver and a tight end body. Yeah, but yeah. If I'm talking just wide receiving core, could be Burden. That's an interesting answer because it wasn't obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they not as good at that position as they thought they were?
No, I think they're real good. I think DJ Moore is a star, and Adunze is going to be a heck of a player. He got to get enough opportunities. And Burden, I became a fan of Burden when I saw him go in there and block on the goal line. Yeah. You know,
he's not afraid to mix it up.
That guy, and get the ball in his hand, he is a playmaker. I think their receiving core is really good. I really do. And then you throw the tight ends in there, David.
Great stuff.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say you became a fan of Burden when you watched that 12-minute package they did.
He didn't get all the way through it.
Okay.
When I watched what?
They did this incredibly long story on him before the game. We joked about
Mully it. Mully timed it. It was 12 minutes.
No, yeah. I didn't see
it. A little bit long.
Missed that.
All right, Dave. Great stuff. Great seeing you. Can't wait. Yep. Next week.
College football's here.
College football here, but next week
we'll be
breaking down game number one. Can you believe that?
And you'll be predicting Bears-Vikings.
Yep, I'm ready. Oh, I will be.
Very exciting.
I'll be ready. I'm ready now. Let's do it.
Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767 at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.